Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today, the interview is with Miss Pam Africa. Miss Africa is from the Move 9 movement, where they were incarcerated. Miss Pam Africa was not incarcerated. Her family, the Africa, was. Before, I have interviewed Janet and Janine Africa and Miss Pam Africa together. This is the first interview, Miss Pam Africa herself. She was not in prison, but her family was bombed in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania by Mayor Goodman. So that is what she will say, I believe. That's what Janet and Janine Africa have said before. He thought he would become governor. He was the first black mayor of Philadelphia. The white officers were extremely racist. The police were, back then in the 1980s, falsely imprisoning Mexicans and blacks and Latinos. They were under the leadership of John Africa. Muammar Abu-Jamal is a political prisoner. He was a journalist then. He called in and asked one of the judges which one fired the shot. Do you know which one fired the shot with the Move 9 because they had been in prison? Janet and Janine Africa gave an interview where they were talking about how their baby, how the police crushed her with a newborn baby in her arms, and the baby died, crushed the skull. So she stomped on her back, walked on her back. So we'll be talking about Miss Pam Africa. As soon as I can get her on, I will come back. I'm going to play some music.
You're my sunshine, you brighten my day. Cause you're all my soul fire, yeah.
Out of mind around the world, played a lot of games. It's been the depth of my heart, you the one to blame. I'm looking deep into your eyes, I can see the future. Ain't no me without you, and that's a damn truth. You got me pouring out my heart in this fucking booth. And you're just like candy with a sweet tooth. A little bit of you, just wonders for the soul. The better half of me will never grow old.
You're my sunshine, you brighten my day. Cause you're all my soul fire, yeah.
A dark night like this, I really need your help. I'm lost without you, so come and save me, dear. My superwoman in my life, ain't no need to feel. The brightest thing in the world, let your little light shine. One of a kind, I'm really glad to say you're mine. You're the only one that keep the inner beast in line. My time will never be wasted with you. With you, it's always something to do.
You're my sunshine, you brighten my day. Cause you're all mine.
Sunshine, you make everything better. Summer rays, ain't no more stormy weather.
Down and out. I guess it's just one of those days. I got a lot on my mind, trying to manage my time. Maybe you could come give me a hug and bring me back to life.
That I need a hug. I'm going through some feelings right now.
I need a hug, baby, and I need it from you right now.
I need a hug.
Oh, I need a hug. It's just one of those. Need to feel your arms around me, see your pretty face.
Today it feels like the world is on my shoulders, and I can feel my energy getting lower. That's why I need you, I need you to come over.
Come over.
So I can feel the way I feel every time I hold you.
Every time that you're with me,
every time
you give me.
Yes, you do.
Baby,
girl.
I am energy.
Yeah, yeah.
Time that you're with me.
Every time
that you're with me.
it right now. Yeah, yeah.
I need a hug.
Need you right now, babe.
You're my sunshine, you brighten my day. Cause you're all mine, so fine, yeah, you brighten my day.
See, I done been around the world, played a lot of games. It's been the depth of my heart, you the one to blame. I'm looking deep into your eyes, I can see the future. Ain't no me without you, and that's a damn truth. You got me pouring out my heart in this fucking booth. And you're just like candy with a sweet tooth. A little bit of you, just wonders for the soul. The better half of me will never grow old.
You're my sunshine, you brighten my day. Cause you're all mine, so fine, yeah, you brighten my day.
A dark night like this, I really need your help. I'm lost without you, so come and save me, dear. My superwoman in my life, ain't no need to feel. The brightest thing in the world, let your little light shine. One of a kind, I'm really glad to say you're mine. You're the only one that keep the inner beast in line. My time will never be wasted with you. With you, it's always something to do.
You're my sunshine, you brighten my day. Cause you're all mine, so fine.
All right, everyone, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today, the interview, like I was saying, is Miss Pam Africa. We've been waiting on her a little bit here and now. We'll be talking about Mr. Mumia Abu-Jamal, and forgive me if I pronounced his name wrong.
Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Mumia Abu-Jamal. He is a political prisoner. He was a journalist back in the 80s. He's been falsely imprisoned, and his health is deteriorated. He tried to help the Move 9, Miss Pam Africa, and her family, Janet and Janine Africa, and the rest of the Africans, but he was falsely imprisoned. He was on death row, but they managed to get him off death row, and his health is deteriorating something horribly. So how are you doing, Miss Africa?
I'm fine. It's a little more detailed. I would, you know, ask people to go to, I mean, I'm doing fine, and for background and dealing with Mumia's case, and if you go up on YouTube, you can find several different documentaries, and that leads you in from 1981, and when he was beaten severely, accused of killing, you know, a police officer. His brother was beat up on the night of December the 9th, 1981. And, you know, everything that he went through there, it's been a worldwide and all movement, you know, for Mumia. It was at its height during the 90s, the early 2000s. And, you know, right now things is a little quiet, and, you know, we have, you know, we want to shake it up. I see that you have people from the Nation of Islam on, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and when Mumia first got sick and, you know, his health was, you know, so bad that, you know, we thought that he could possibly pass. And Minister Louis Farrakhan, you know, got involved in. He told us to let the prison know that he will send, you know, if they allowed it, and, you know, one of his best doctors there. And if not, we were to find one, and so that they could, you know, deal with Mumia's health. Of course, they denied that. But we had to battle, you know, within the prisons, in order to get Mumia. He had hepatitis C, and they was refusing to give him the medication for hepatitis C because it was $1,000 a pill. Can you imagine that? $1,000 a pill. And they got the cure, not the maybe cure. You know, they got the cure. When I'm talking about they, I'm talking about this government. They got it from a third world country where it was $3 a pill. But when they came to the home of the free and democracy and all that BS they talk, you know, it became $1,000 a pill, not just for Mumia, but this was the cost of this pill throughout the prison and throughout, you know, the outside communities. When we found out about, you know, Mumia, being sick, and he wasn't diagnosed with the with hepatitis C. They kept giving him all kinds of stuff, which was causing him to have all kinds of reactions and stuff. And then there was a brother by the name of Joseph. Oh, wow, I can't think of Joseph's last name right now. And but he was a member of the Panthers in on earlier years, and he became a medical doctor. He also worked with Doctors Without Borders. And so, again, I'm telling you, they would not allow doctors in to examine him fully, but he got on Mumia's visiting list, and he examined him by sitting there looking. He looked at his eyes. He looked at the skin condition. He looked at his weight, and he said, "You got hepatitis C." So we went to work from there. When we found out about it was hepatitis C, you know, that's when, you know, we announced it to people and that the cost of it was $1,000. But here's the important thing here. You know, people were saying, "You'll never get that for him." And, you know, but we was pointing out, we're not just getting this for him, because what we found out that in the prisons in Pennsylvania at that particular time, it was 496 people who had hepatitis C. Several people had died, and from this hepatitis C, and it was a an outbreak of it in the prisons. And so what we started doing was putting pressure. And we went wherever there we can find information on hepatitis C. We went to the Board of Health. They was having a meeting there. And we found out there, and they didn't know nothing about, because their interest was not what was happening in the prison. I went there because they were doing hepatitis C. And we found out that there were 1,600 people in a state of Pennsylvania who had hepatitis C, not people on the inside in prison. This is what was on the out, and they showed us this map of, you know, all these different places. So we started demonstrating at the governor's office in town, not his one that's way out where, you know, nobody can get to unless you're doing like a little demonstration. You know how they have stuff away from us. But he had an office here in Philadelphia, so we started going to his office, which was on Broad and in near Broad and Spruce, and demonstrating there, because this is where several hundred people had died some years ago, maybe in the 80s, and all from what was that disease? That Legionnaire's disease. So this was a perfect place, you know, because they, like I said, in the state it was over 1,600, you know, people who had this hepatitis C, and people didn't know. People didn't know about the Legionnaire's disease, and here's the governor sitting there. So we were set up, you know, right out in front of there, and let people know what was happening, and they would shut the front of the place off, and which drew more people, and, you know, they would put the police around us, and they had the people going in the back doors, but their curiosity would make them come, and we would tell them, "Your life is in danger coming here," and we'll run down to them about what was happening there and what was happening in the prison. And there was, and let me tell you another thing, there were no commercials dealing with hepatitis C. All of a sudden, you know, there became commercials. That's not the only place that we demonstrated, but I'm just saying, if you're consistent and persistent and you don't back down and you have the information, because we got books and books of information, boxes of information on hepatitis C from the Board of Health. And then we went to this other place, and it was a LGBT place, and they had information on hepatitis C, which their stuff was far more. They was telling you where people can get, you know, the shot for free, and, you know, how when people came out the prison who had it, you know, how, you know, places to go to and all to take care of that. So, you know, wherever there was information for Mumia, other brothers and sisters and children and elders that was in the prison that was dying from hepatitis C, that's where we went. Mumia wound up filing a suit at the prison about the hepatitis C, and the prison officials turned that down and said, you know, he didn't have it. And then he had to file another suit, which took him outside the prison into I'm trying to think of the area, but it's a predominantly white folks area, and black folks, you know, you don't usually tread up that way. But being that they were having hearings for Mumia, we was up there, and we treated the same way as if we was in Philadelphia. We had the courtroom full, we had the overflow room full, we had people on the outside, you know, putting out information, because the information that was dealing with Mumia and the other people in prison with hepatitis C had to deal with the people that was in these communities, and whether they knew about it or not. And we wound up getting a lot of support. I mean, a lot of support. These were poor white folks mostly that lived up there. And they was talking about the hepatitis C that was, you know, that they were suffering from. To make a long story short, there was a whole lot of, you know, law breaking that was found out, how the Department of Correction was hiding information and, you know, from and maneuvering on papers and to stop Mumia from getting the treatment. And we had a judge you know, who was there. He had Mumia by video in, you know, in the courtroom. And again, to make a long story short, we wound up winning that case. And when that case was won for Mumia, it meant that it was won for everybody throughout the United States of America that was in prison and those that was out, because he got the hepatitis C cure. And that's what I had to keep saying, cure. The hepatitis C cure is what he got. He no longer has hepatitis, but he have, and I'm telling you, this was like a two-year battle. But you just got to stay consistent, because people, you'll never get that. It's $1,000 a pill. Look here, the only way people lose is that they don't fight. They give up and throw their hands up. Well, that's not us. When I'm saying not us, I'm not talking about just me. I'm talking about people throughout the United States, because they rose to the occasion on Mumia, and they was able to get the information out in their communities and things about what was happening. So up to date where we're at now. And since then, Mumia has had open heart surgery. Where the guard said, he who had to stand over, had to escort him to the hospitals and stuff and stay in the room while they was operating on him. He told Mumia, he said he almost fainted. He said, because your heart was on the table and you was laying on the gurney. He said the heart was still moving. Because they caused conditions by them not doing what it was that they were supposed to do. They caused a condition where Mumia wound up. When we won the case, the guards came to Mumia and we said, we got good news and we got bad news. How you want it? He said, any way you want to put it out, right? So when he did, he says, well, you're going to get the hepatitis C, medication, the shots. You're going to get that. He said, but the second thing, bad news, you have cirrhosis of the liver. There's a lawsuit going on now. I mean, cirrhosis of the liver. They gave that to him because they would not do what it was, what it was that they were supposed to do. And they manipulated papers. You know, there's suit that's being filed on, all that right now. But in the meantime, he was rushed to the hospital at one point. When he was getting ready to go into a diabetic coma, his body had blown up the size, the largest prison uniform. He could not fit. I mean, he got in it, but the buttons was open. His feet looked like Fred Flintstone feet. They were big. You couldn't get them into the sneakers. And then he was wearing those flip-flop things. His toes had swollen up so bad you couldn't get that the thong, in between there. He wound up sitting in a wheelchair. We fought, to get him that right medication and things. And through the years, they have been, and what they're doing to Mumia, I want to point out, is not unique to Mumia. This is the torture that goes on inside these prisons to men, women, and children, and our elders that's inside these prisons. But where we at now, he done started getting sick again. The skin is like black leather, and you know, his ears is beginning to be covered with this stuff. He's been itching for several years, and he's at that point where he's itching again, where there is no place that he have not scratched and dug the skin up. And because it's a persistent 7-day-a-week, 24-hour, when I was just up visiting him on Monday, and, you know, I went to prepare his food for him from the vending machine, and I happened to look over, you know, his head was tilting a little bit, and I'm trying to hurry up and get the food done. Then I looked, his head was down a little further, and then when I looked again, he was, like, sitting up. What had happened, his head had slammed on the table, and because, he do not sleep. But at the same time, this brother is so in love with people, and people are in love with him. That's what keeps him going. And he's writing, you know, two more books. You know, he's taking a college course. And all at the same time, you know, he's going through all of this. And the sin and the shame of it is we're in Black History Month. There were three black people within recent years and healthy to Mumia, you know, being home so that we can take care of him. We can deal with his diet, because that's another thing. The diet is not, you know, conducive to a heart healthy diet, one for a person that has diabetes, and one for a person who has cirrhosis of the liver. And again, I'm saying this goes all the way across the board in the prison. I'm talking about Mumia's condition. I'm not just talking about him. I'm talking about what goes on throughout this. They all are dying from medical neglect. They all are being, you know, it is a form of torture that he goes through 24 hours a day, 7 days a week without a let up. And, you know, his health is declining. And when I went up to see him after, you know, one of his older sons went up to see him and came back, he said, you know, when he was coming down the hallway leaving, he said tears were rolling down his face. He said, the lady asked him, she said, are you all right? She said, Was that Mumia Abu-Jamal that you was visiting? Because, you know, he'd been in there for years, so people know. She had to ask the question. She wasn't sure. This is what they have done to him. When he came out for the visit, you know, his son, who was, you know, was there, and, you know, he said he was waiting for his father to, you know, come out, Mumia to come out, and, you know, he saw this elder that came by and that was bent over and had a complete bald head. And, you know, he bypassed him. He said, then he heard this Issa. And he turned around looking, was Mumia. Mumia's condition is so that he don't recognize him. It's not as if some cop or some guard then jumped on him and beat him the hell up. It's medical neglect. It's medical, you know, terrorism that is going on inside this prison. And the thing is, we have the evidence of innocence, and we need to put more pressure. I mean pressure, because they are slowly torturing. They are slowly killing this brother. They have been able to attack the body, but the brain is still intact, you know, right now, because he studied kicking off information. He has a, him and Mark Lamont Hill, if you go on YouTube, and you will hear, and what is called the classroom and the cell. That's a book that they did. They now have a podcast together. How it's done, damn it, I don't know, and but it's happening. But if you would hear him, you would not have any idea of what he is going through, the torture his body is going through. And, you know, you would have no idea. You would think everything is cool. And, you know, that's how he is so into putting out information about what's going on, because people tune in. He never talk about what health conditions he in and how he need help. And, you know, I wouldn't have known that he was in the condition that he's in. I'm just, you know, I'm recovering from cancer of the throat. and I didn't have a voice for a year, and people was wondering, you know, where I was at. That's what was happening to me. But my voice is back now, and I didn't go to visit Mumia because I wound up with the with COVID. Then I had another cold, and I'm much better now. My energy sounds really good now, but my energy goes up and it goes down. But while I have energy, I use it to the best I can. And I've also had sense enough to know when it's
to let him out when he's that sick.
They need to let him out, period. Because he's innocent and it's been proven. In the last court pieces that happened with Mumia, there was a black judge by the name of Tucker. Tucker is the only judge that stood up against this. And see, this case here is not just a case of, this is the government against this brother, just like the government is against Brother Jamil Alameen, that the government was against Sekou Odinga, who's dead now, because of the medical neglect that they gave him in the prison. These brothers, innocence is before everything. Mumia's life is not in the hands of these people. Mumia's life is in the hands of us. They have a saying, back in the day, Pharaoh, let our people go. No, people let Pharaoh go and the MFO will fall. His whole administration will fall. We got to cut ourselves away from it. And people say, that's hard to do. Well, you better look at South Africa. Look at South Africa. They are kicking the French out. They kicking America out because they got tired of the years and years and years of abuse. And they raising up armies and all throughout South Africa to stand up against this machine. They have, joined hands with people that the United States don't deal with, but they're dealing with it for the protection of themselves, and that's Russia. They pulled them in. They also...
You got more than 60 seconds. It'll go on another 14 minutes.
Okay. But, you get me started. It's just so much. But I just want to tell you about Judge Tucker. Judge Tucker gave Mumia the right for an appeal. That was going against the entire government because the entire government, you name the alphabet that they fall under, CIA, FBI, whatever, DOC, Department of Corrections, whatever. And he gave Mumia the right to appeal. When you get the right to appeal your case, you also can apply for an appeal bail. His lawyers didn't do, the next person, when Judge Tucker gave him them rights the FOP went judge shopping, they came up with this thing called the King's Bench Act, right? Which did not apply to them. And what they did when they put it before the first judge rejected. He said, y'all can't get this. It doesn't fit. The second judge did it. Then the third judge took it on. Within that time that they had them dealing with the King's Bench Act, they got rid of Judge Tucker. They transferred him into a higher position because the case would have went right back to him, and they knew that Tucker would have let Mumia go. Not based on the fact that Mumia is a great guy and so forth and so on, but based clearly on evidence. So what they did, they brought another black judge in, a woman by the name of Clemens. Clemens did everything that they wanted her to do. She turned the appeal down. This is why Mumia is getting sicker and sicker and sicker. Then you had a judge, Judge Griffin, who came from Arkansas. He was a 20-year judge, a sitting judge. He came from Arkansas, and he also had his own church. He looked at the case of Mumia, and he was doing Zooms talking about why they should let Mumia go. Factually legally, with all the legal terms that there is, Judge Clemens, I'm rushing through this. Judge Clemens, instead of her doing the right thing, she wrote a bullshit. I'm trying to be, I get to them words, but she wrote a lot of BS, which only shows that her criminality and all, but people are acting as if this judge did the right thing. No, she did not do the right thing. And this is how these people get away with stuff. But we're putting pressure, and we're going, you know, I'll get you back on the next thing. But, you know, please, people, you can go to the YouTube and, you know, get any information and all the documentaries on the case. You can see where Colin Kaepernick and all who took a knee and all for black folks, but he stood up straight for Mumia. He took a stand against the injustice that was happening here. This is when they were study going after him. He took that stand for Mumia. There's a whole lot of people that took the stand, but, you know, we're calling people together. Rise up now, everybody. It's time to fight, because you're not just fighting for Mumia. You're fighting for the exposure of what's happening in all these prisons. And I know that people are doing things in these, you know, prisons. There's great work that's going on inside these prisons. And but we got to do more. We got to do more. So I thank you. And you can contact the Campaign to Bring Mumia Home is one site. And the mobilization, the number four, the mobilization for Mumia, and where you can get, you know, information dealing with, you know, this case. You can also the New York Coalition, and is another site, and on what to do, where you can get the information. Show these documentaries, and I'm telling you, when I tell you about the judge that came up from Arkansas, a black man, he took his life in his hands, and to come up here and to tell the truth. He did it there, and because you know they hang them high and put tires around you, light you up, and you know you don't go up against this government. But this, and the thing is, when he came up here to take that stand for Mumia, and these religious people, these black religious people, and with their churches, they stood with the government over standing with God on the righteous side.
These religious black people stood with the government.
Yes, yes, the ones that like right now they're building a 76er stadium. And you know, in the poor people's community, and the blacks and stuff, and now they got all these commercials on as if you know, because people been demonstrating for years. Now that you know they're really still planning on doing it, they got commercials with these black ministers, and I'm from here and I'm from there, and you know all these you know, and the coalition of black you know ministers, and we're all for this stadium because it's gonna bring jobs, and then they show you people in the community. Look, they did that in Brooklyn. They did that in Brooklyn, New York. Destroyed the black community. Put this thing in there. How many black folks got jobs? Basketball star or whatever, and all said that, you know, he had a stake in it for the black community. They had the ministers. They had people talking about, you know, the jobs, you know, it ain't happening. And not only did they build that, you know, and took people's homes, they build it more because people want to be by the stadium. You know, they're putting more and more people out, this gentrification. And I'm looking, I'm saying, these monsters is doing the exact same thing. They have not changed their strategy at all, you know, right here in this community.
Lord have mercy. In Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yes, yes, yes. Up south. You know,
this thing sounds like a bad place.
Right. And all, but you know, we as black people, one thing about white folks and all about, you know, and I'm not talking people that's white and this shoe don't fit, don't even, you know, white folks, they can hate each other. I'm talking about within this government and these corporations. But when it comes time to taking us down, they stand as one. If they were divided, they could never do what it is that they're doing. And, you know, they don't give a stuff about, you know, this person likes or that person likes. And I can't, you know, get it together. We're going to take these niggas down. And that's how they feel about it. And, you know, and for people that's, you know, upset about that word and, you know, I ain't got no apology for it because this is how they see us. And I'm speaking as how they're looking at us. And, you know, we're not deserving of life or any of that. So Once again, you know, I thank you very much for the time. And
Miss Pam Africa.
Yes. I really appreciate your time.
I really appreciate the time, and I'm going to share this with as many people as I can, and as many websites as I can.
All right, now. Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings, Ms. Pam
okay.
Africa.
All right.
Everyone, you've been listening to Ms. Pam Africa. She was talking about Mr. Jamal. He is still in prison. They did get him off death row. He's in bad condition. As you can hear, medical neglect, medical torture. Medical neglect, medical torture. They're torturing the poor man. They're torturing the poor man medically. So this is horrible. What goes on in the prisons is horrible. They're supposed to let him out. They won't let Mr. Jamal go. They won't let him go. They should set him free. They like to torture him. Medically, he's suffering. He's suffering along with hundreds of thousands of others in these prisons. Medical neglect, medical abuse, medical torture. He's slowly dying. So torturous death. Set him free, please. Set him free. Do the right thing. Don't keep that poor man in prison and torture him to death like that. He's dying a slow, torturous death. He's innocent. Mr. Jamal is innocent. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Buck. She told you the website she could go to. I hate it. I feel powerless. I hate it. But I put the show out there. Let Ms. Pam Apple talk as much as she wanted. All right. Everyone, thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler and Ms. Pam Africa.